Hey, Corey here. We've had an influx of new listeners, and so I just want to make sure that if you are new to the podcast, you don't just jump in and start listening to these daily episodes, which we've been doing. Please go back and listen to the first at least 8 episodes so you have an idea of what Collapse is, what it is that Corey is talking about. Also, if you've been with us for a while and you're enjoying the content, please join us on Patreon. We would love to see you there. There's a link, as always, in the description. I've been watching a show recently on Apple TV, which I guess, forgive me for being a consumer of subscription services, but I am. I enjoy much of what Apple produces, and they've got a show right now called For All Mankind, and it's very interesting. It's a alternate history look at what would have happened if the U.S. had not beat the Soviet Union to the moon. And it plays off this idea that the U.S. may not have backed down from the space race. They would have invested more in it. And then it goes into the sort of not only advancements in technology that comes from it, but the consequences that it has on society as a whole. And this idea that the Cold War never really goes away. Now, in many ways, I think that the Cold War hasn't gone away, or at least we're in a whole different type of Cold War now. But the reason I bring this up is because it is fascinating to think about the potential pivotal moments, not just in history, but happening every day today, and how they will unfold in history, right? What things are going to be different about the future because of the actions that are being taken today? Actions by governments, by organizations, by corporations, and by individual people. Sometimes forget that the entire arc, you know, of my future, for example, can be altered by choices that I make today. It's not all deterministic, right? Sometimes my brain works in a deterministic way, like there's some end that we're working towards and that it's sort of inevitable, whatever that might be, on an individual level, as a world, right? As a society, as humanity. But that's very much not the case. The future isn't set in stone, and the degree to which we talk about collapse is not set in stone either. And this is something that we do frequently talk about here, that collapse can happen in various ways depending on the actions that we take today to mitigate it. Well, keeping on the theme of geopolitics, I want to recognize that it is a very essential, I guess, crucial part of the world today, and one that is probably underspoken about on this podcast. One of the main reasons why is because I don't feel qualified to talk about geopolitics in depth. It's not an area of expertise for me. While it is an area of interest, it's not one that I've done a lot of research on. I am relatively weak when it comes to recent modern history. And there are enormous amounts of details that go into and complexities within the international relationships. So anyway, that's to say, I could probably talk about that a lot more on the podcast, as geopolitically, there are many threats that we face. But I don't, because I'm sure there are other people talking about this in a much better way than I could. And so today, I am going to talk about a couple of things, a few articles that I've read recently that shed some light on the international situation and that I find quite interesting. The first of these is to touch on the Russia-Ukraine war, which is something that we haven't really talked about for quite a long time. There was a think tank that came out with basically a paper on the war, and it talks about, the subtitle of it is Massive Losses and Tiny Gains for a Declining Power. It says, despite claims of battlefield momentum in Ukraine, the data shows that Russia is paying an extraordinary price for minimal gains and is in decline as a major power. So we talk about the collapse of the Soviet Union, and it's used often as an example of a collapsed empire. We also talk about how dying empires will often, as their dying gasp during their phase of agonal breathing, are desperately reaching outward, right, to try and extend. They're trying to either gain more resources as a last-ditch effort, or they're trying to save face or look powerful when they're not. So I think two things can be true. The Soviet Union itself collapsed as an empire, right? Russia survived and as a country has been experiencing collapse since the collapse of the Soviet Union. And we're seeing that power continue to decline today. Now, the reason that I'm bringing this article up is just because thinking about the human toll of this war I don't know that I had internalized, at least it wasn't at the forefront of my mind, the number of casualties. I have, I'm on the one of the subreddits called the Combat Footage, and there's videos all the time of battles, of combat, and some of it quite graphic. And I don't enjoy being a part of that subreddit. I don't enjoy those videos, but it does help remind me how awful war is. It sort of separates, I guess, from me any of the desire to view war romantically, like maybe so many do, and to feel how just blunt and tragic and disgusting and vile and sad and gory war can be. And in so many ways, and this is not to speak ill of the lives lost, it feels pathetic because it is a pathetic waste of life and potential. And as this article speaks about, or this paper speaks about, it's all for tiny gains in a power that is dying. And I want to read a couple of things here. So the first paragraph opens by saying, if you listen to Russian President Vladimir Putin and even some U.S. policymakers, it sounds like Russia is marching to an inevitable battlefield victory in Ukraine. In a December 17, 2025 speech at the National Defense Control Center of the Russian Federation, President Putin remarked, our troops are advancing with confidence and grinding down the hostile forces, defeating enemy units, its groups, forces, and reserves, including so-called elite formations trained in Western centers and equipped with modern foreign weaponry. It goes on to talk about how, many in the U.S. policymakers note that Russia has the upper hand, and they always did. They're much bigger. They're much stronger. At some point, size will win. However, it says, a close look at the data suggests that Russia is hardly winning, and even more interestingly, that Russia is increasingly a declining power. To better understand the state of the war and Russia's battlefield performance, this analysis asks, how successful has the Russian military been in achieving the Kremlin's main objectives? What are the broader implications for the United States and Europe? And to answer these questions, this assessment examines several indicators of Russia's battlefield performance: fatality and casualty rates, the relative rate of advance of Russian forces, and the size of Russian territorial gains. Now, I'm not going to get into detail on all of these things, but I did want to read off some of the numbers they have here. The Center for Strategic and International Studies, I'll link to it so that you can check it out as well as information on who this think tank is. So it says the analysis has several main findings. First, Russian forces have suffered approximately 1.2 million casualties. That's killed, wounded, and missing. And as many as 325,000 killed since February. No major power has suffered anywhere near these numbers of casualties or fatalities in any war since World War II. So we're talking in, 80 years, no war has been as deadly as this one. And, at least here in the U.S., we talk all the time about, Vietnam and Korea and all these wars that were experienced and how deadly they were. And they were. Right now, in front of our eyes, we're witnessing a war in which there's been 1.2 million casualties just by one side. And again, casualties doesn't always mean death. It's a mix of killed, wounded, and missing. It says, Russian forces are advancing remarkably slowly on the battlefield. In the Pokrovsk offensive, for example, Russian forces advanced at an average rate of just 70 meters per day. This is slower than the most brutal offensive campaigns over the last century, including the notoriously bloody Battle of the Somme during World War I. Russian forces have gained less than 1.5% of Ukrainian territory since the start of 2024. And third, Russia is becoming a second or third-rate economic power. Its economy is showing strains because of the war, though it has not buckled. Russian manufacturing is declining, consumer demand is weakening, inflation remains stubbornly high, and the country faces a labor crunch. Economic growth slowed to 0.6% in 2025, and Russia continues to fall behind in key technologies such as AI. Russia had a grand total of zero companies in the top 100 list of technology companies in the world as measured by market capitalization. All right, I think that's all I'm going to read there. On the Ukrainian side, they believe that the casualties are about half the number of the Russian side, so about 600,000 casualties. And I think that was another surprise to me, that Ukraine, being on the defensive, right, gives them an upper hand. However, they're, being attacked by someone who was supposed to be the far superior power, the one that said that it was going to be a two-day operation. They would be in and out. It has turned into a two-year operation. It has turned into a four-year operation at this point. And Ukraine has suffered half the casualties. Now, I don't know from a deaths perspective, is there a higher number of deaths in Ukrainian casualties versus Russian? I'm not sure. They estimate that of the total 1.8 million casualties so far experienced, they expect that it will increase to around 2 million this spring. And much of this is due to a very new type of warfare, right, that we've seen come about more heavily during this Russia-Ukraine war, which is drone warfare. It has completely changed the game. I, again, not only am I terrible at geopolitics, also when it comes to military strategy and those types of things, I know nothing. But I do know that drones has completely changed the game. It's changed the way that militaries are going to need to operate in this type of warfare moving forward. All right. Now, on this note, I do want to jump to one other, it feels unrelated but slightly related, article that I saw talking about a potential imminent financial collapse for the UN. So the Secretary General, Antonio Guterres, who we've talked about several times on this podcast for one reason or another, he basically warns the United Nations is at risk of imminent financial collapse due to member states not paying their fees. He said the financial crisis was deepening, threatening program delivery, and that money could run out by July. He wrote in a letter to all 193 member states that they had to honor their mandatory payments or overhaul the organization's financial rules to avoid collapse. It comes after the UN's largest contributor, the US, refused to contribute to its regular and peacekeeping budgets and withdrew from several agencies it called a waste of taxpayer dollars. Several other members are in arrears or are simply refusing to pay. Which, yeah, you know, if the US, the largest contributor out of these 193 contributors, says, you know what, nah, we're not going to do it, so no thanks. And, you know, if you're a smaller country and you're looking at this and you're saying, okay, if the US, who contributes 10 or 20 or 30 times the amount that we do, isn't going to pay up, why should we? Especially when the amount that we're going to pay is probably a bigger sacrifice for us. If the US doesn't have to pay, then neither do we. And so, and there was likely already member states that were not paying before this, but this just kind of helps cascade that collapse. Says that the UN General Assembly did approve a partial change to its financial system in 2025. The organization still faces a massive cash crisis compounded by a rule that means it is refunding money it never received. At its headquarters in Geneva, signs warning of the situation have been put up everywhere. In an almost desperate attempt to save cash, the escalators are regularly turned off and the heating turned down. He wrote in his letter that the UN had faced financial crises in the past, but that the current situation was categorically different. Decisions not to honor assessed contributions that finance a significant share of the approved regular budget have now been formally announced. He said the integrity of the entire system depended on states adhering to their obligation under the UN Charter to pay their assessed contributions, adding that 2025 ended with a record amount unpaid, equivalent to 77% of the total owed. Or in other words, they only received 23% of what was owed. He said a rule that the UN must return unspent money on particular programs to members that it could not implement a budget created a double blow in which it was expected to give back cash that does not exist. The letter reads, just this month, as part of this assessment, we were compelled to return $227 million, funds that we have not collected. Later on, it talks about how Trump has separately been accused by critics of seeking to replace some functions of the UN with his Board of Peace to oversee regeneration efforts in Gaza. So you may have heard about this. He's created a Board of Peace. He's charging, I can't remember, like $1 billion for countries to join it. Very few have. And his idea is, I mean, it's seemingly like he is trying to create his own little UN, but for this purpose of building peace in Gaza, which probably just means, again, putting like a Trump resort in Gaza. Interestingly, and this is just a spectacular example of catabolic collapse. The UN's Human Rights Office has warned that serious violations will now go undocumented because it lacks the funds to deploy investigators. In the past, their evidence has led to prosecutions for war crimes and crimes against humanity. In Afghanistan, which has one of the highest rates of maternal mortality in the world, UN Women has had to close mother and baby clinics. Meanwhile, the World Food Program has had to cut rations to refugees fleeing the conflicts in Sudan. Just interesting that, yeah, these agencies are saying, look, the UN's human rights agency saying, we got to let investigators go. which is going to cause not only that the current crimes that are being committed are going to go uninvestigated and there's no justice, unprosecuted, but also it's going to increase the number of crimes happening because people know that those aren't being investigated any longer. War crimes and crimes against humanity are no longer going to be investigated. Think about that. And all because these nations, mine included and mine primarily, has openly declared, we're no longer going to fund this. There are 1,000 different things like this happening right now, threatening world peace. There are wars kicking off in countries that never even get mentioned in the news or on this podcast. One just out of pocket right now that I'll mention is that Sudan is going through another flare-up of civil war, right? We don't hear about that. Not really. Hyper-normalization has made it so that, one of the worst wars from a casualty perspective in the last 100 years is happening at this very moment. And most people, myself included, go, days at a time without even considering that. Russia and Ukraine, at this point, 4 years later, it's not in the news every day. It's actually very rarely in the news. And because there is so much else happening at home and abroad, I don't think about it all that much anymore. But it is massive. It is of massive importance. But the reality is that, there's just 1,000 tiny things happening, 1,000,000 tiny things happening that are only tiny or only seem tiny in perspective against the backdrop of all the larger things that are going on and against the even larger backdrop of collapse in the future of what all these tiny little things come together to create. So referring back to the beginning of the episode and this idea that, small changes being made now can have large effects on the future, I do believe that. Unfortunately, the majority of the decisions being made today are not good ones and veer us downward instead of upward on the human trajectory. I appreciate your support. Thank you for being a listener to this podcast. It really does mean so much. Hope you stick around. Please feel free to join me on Patreon. I've been talking most recently about some things around resilience and just getting people's ideas on what they're doing to be resilient. Would love to have you join me there. Would appreciate your support and your discussion. All right, thanks. We'll talk to you again later.
Hey, Corey here. If you are listening to the back catalog of Breaking Down Collapse, thank you. Those episodes are so vital. They're so important. But I also wanted to let you know that I am now doing daily episodes. Yes, that's right. Here on the podcast, daily episodes. So if you are enjoying the back catalog, great. Please also feel free to zoom forward to the most recent episodes. Catch us daily. They are quick little episodes, and I think you'll enjoy them. Thanks.